One of the biggest problems is fractional reserve banking through the Federal Reserve System.
So if you have the chance, the opportunity to control some of the banking function in your life, wouldn't you want to look into that?
Bottom line is, when you put your money at the bank, you're an unsecured depositor of that institution now. So if the bank fails, well, your money is, well, look up what percentage of deposits are backed up by FDIC funds. It'll surprise you.
If Americans really knew what was going on with the banking system, there'd be a revolution overnight.
You will contribute less to the overall problem of endless money creation, which is what makes the money that you already have less valuable. Every single year, the dollar, every single day, they are printing money. The Federal Reserve is, and giving it to the government, and that's why you can't keep up.
Yeah, and there's direct benefits and indirect benefits of doing it the way that Nelson described an infinite banking concept through properly designed dividend-paying whole life insurance policies.
Guaranteeing the collateral, your death benefit, paying you interest and dividends every year, uninterrupted growth, providing you access to capital, giving you privacy. I mean, it's all these things wrapped into one.
Wouldn't you be better to just go and open up your own bank?
Hey, I'm Dave.
And I'm Paul.
And this is the Wealth Warehouse Podcast.
We have something interesting, and it was kind of Dave's idea to read an excerpt from a very special book. I think it's a very special book for a lot of people practicing IBC because it gets to kind of like the main problem. Like, there's a lot of problems, like Nelson Nash talked about, right? There's Parkinson's Law, there's taxes, there's all these other things. One of the biggest problems is fractional reserve banking through the Federal Reserve System. So we're going to read you a little excerpt from a book called The Creature from Jekyll Island by G. Edward Griffin, written in mid-90s. Been revised a couple times, but phenomenal book.
Phenomenal book. One of the scariest books you could probably ever read at the same time. Strangely enough.
I think you said it. Maybe it was a terrible story or a horrifying story told very well. I think is something you said, or maybe I said it. I don't know. I think you said it, but anyway.
I don't know. We say a lot of brilliant things, so we'll just take credit for it.
Just pure gold. I mean, just all the time.
Yeah. All right. So you start. So we're gonna play. We'll play two different parts here. You'll be the question asker, and I'll be the person answering your questions. Who, in this case, you asking the questions are like a typical consumer and customer of a bank. I am the banker.
Right. So this is from The Creature from Jekyll Island. This is what it looks like. It's a soft cover book. I'm going to read the introduction. So the following exchange was published in the British humor magazine Punch on April 3rd, 1957. It is reprinted here as an appropriate introduction and as a mental exercise to limber the mind for the material contained in this book. Okay, here we go. Now, keep in mind the numbers. This is 1957. Keep that in mind, folks. Okay. What are banks for?
To make money.
For the customers?
For the banks.
Why doesn't bank advertising mention this?
It would not be in good taste, but it is mentioned by implication in references to reserves of $249 million or thereabouts. That is the money that they have made.
Out of the customers?
I suppose so.
They also mention assets of $500 million or thereabouts. Have they made that too?
Not exactly. That is the money they use to make money.
I see. And they keep it in a safe somewhere?
Not at all. They lend it to customers.
Then they haven't got it? Then how is it assets?
They maintain that it would be if they got it back.
But they must have some money in a safe somewhere.
Yes. Usually $500 million or thereabouts. This is called liabilities.
But if they've got it, how can they be liable for it?
Because it isn't theirs.
Then why do they have it?
It has been lent to them by customers.
You mean customers lend banks money?
In effect, they put money into their accounts, so it is really lent to the banks.
And what do the banks do with it?
Lend it to other customers.
But you said that money they lent to other people was assets.
Yes.
Then assets and liabilities must be the same thing?
You can't really say that.
But you've just said it. If I put $100 into my account, the bank is liable to have to pay it back, so it's liabilities. But then they go and lend it to someone else, and he is liable to have it to pay it back, so it's assets. It's the same $100, isn't it?
Yes.
Then it cancels out. It means, doesn't it, that banks haven't really any money at all?
Theoretically.
Never mind theoretically. And if they haven't any money, where do they get their reserves of $249 million or thereabouts?
I told you, that is the money they have made.
How?
Well, when they lend your $100 to someone, they charge him interest.
How much?
It depends on the bank rate. Say 5.5%. That's their profit.
Why isn't it my profit? Isn't it my money?
It's the theory of banking practice that...
When I lend them my $100, why don't I charge them interest?
You do.
You don't say. How much?
It depends on the bank rate. Say 0.5%.
Grasping of me, rather?
I'm not sure what that means. But that's only.
I don't know either.
But that's only if you're not going to draw the money out again.
But of course, I'm going to draw it out again. If I hadn't wanted to draw it out again, I could have buried it in the garden, couldn't I?
They wouldn't like you to draw it out again.
Why not? If I keep it there, you say it's a liability. Wouldn't they be glad if I reduced their liabilities by removing it?
No, because if you remove it, they can't lend it to anyone else.
But if I wanted to remove it, they'd have to let me.
Certainly.
But suppose they've already lent it to another customer.
Then they'll let you have someone else's money.
But suppose he wants his, and they've lent me, and they've let me have it.
You're being purposely obtuse.
I think I'm being acute. What if everyone wanted their money all at once?
It's the theory of banking practice that they never would.
So what banks bank on is not having to meet their commitments?
I wouldn't say that.
Naturally. Well, if there's nothing else you can think to tell me.
Quite so. Now you can go off and open a banking account.
Just one last question.
Of course.
Wouldn't I do better to go off and open up a bank?
There you go. The end. That's an intro to The Creature from Jekyll Island. And that's the perfect last question. So wouldn't you be better to just go and open up your own bank? I mean, that's really what we talk about on this podcast. That's the basis of this podcast, is becoming your own bank, becoming your own banker, because the banker gets to make the rules. So, you know, that's what we want to talk about this today, because what banks have been doing is infinite banking, just like we teach and what we do in our own lives. But banks have been doing this with your money.
Yeah, and they have a monopoly on it, right? Ever since 1913, when the Federal Reserve Act was signed into law, it has gotten worse, right? Now banks have the ability to create money. As we kind of just told you that story, that was a story of how banks create money. They take your money, keep none of it in reserve, and then they lend it to other people, their customers, who also have money deposited there. But if we all went to the bank, first of all, they don't have it in cash. They have very little cash, relatively speaking, at the bank compared to their overall deposits. But if we all went to the bank to get our money out, it's kind of, you know, you allude to the It's a Wonderful Life story with George Bailey all the time that people are, Potter will pay 50 cents on the dollar, you know, whatever.
Yep.
Yeah, they all want their money, right? So.
Yeah, I remember it a couple of years ago, I was making some cash withdrawals. And no kidding, I showed up to, you know, one of these, a big branch, you know, one of the national bank chains in the country. And I said, I need $10,000 in cash. And the guy looked at me like I was crazy. He's like, well, you should probably really call here first before you come. Turned out they did have $10,000. I don't know that they had much more than that, you know? And then I got all the questions. what's it for? None of your business. Oh, but it is our business. We're the bank. We don't have to give you our money. So, I mean, if you want to prove that that money is actually, it really belongs to the bank when you deposit there and you're just an unsecured creditor, that's really all you are. Go to the bank and say you have $50,000 in an account. Go ask for $50,000 in cash. See what happens. It's worth it. It's worth doing just for the fun of it. Just to see how they react.
Yep.
And you tell me how easy it is to get $50,000 of cash out of that bank.
I guarantee that you're going to be talking to, you know, the regular teller, right? That you go up there. Hey, I've got my account. Here's my account number. Here's my IDs. I want to take out $50,000. I've got $55,000 in the account. I want it all in cash. You're going to be talking to a bank manager. You're going to be taken to a special, you know, special office. Maybe it's all glass, you know, out in the open or whatever, but you're going there first before you get anything done.
And they're going to ask you a lot of uncomfortable questions, you know, because they want to know what is it for. Because, you know, really in the eyes of the bank and honestly in the eyes of the law, in this, the actual system that we live in, you're guilty until proven innocent. And that's what you have to do every time you go to a bank is you have to prove that you're innocent. You can't even deposit $10,000 in cash without answering a bunch of questions. They won't take your money without answering questions.
You know, that's right. And, you know, it's all regulatory now, as we know from taking we have to take anti-money laundering training every year as part of our curriculum, right, Dave, as life insurance agents. And that is a big part of it, as you know, learn about the history of the Bank Secrecy Act and all the other, there was, you know, the 9/11 stuff. There's all this stuff, right, to make you safer, though, right, to make the consumer safer. But yeah, and it depends on the bank, too, like.
Only criminals use cash.
Yeah, that's right.
Right.
Bottom line is when you put your money at the bank, you're an unsecured depositor of that institution now. So if the bank fails, well, your money is, well, ooh, the FDIC, Paul. Well, look up what percentage of deposits are backed up by FDIC funds. It'll surprise you. It's less than 2%.
Yeah, it's funny. That number is about the same as the amount, the percentage of term insurance policies that actually ever pay out. Less than 2%.
Right. Yeah. What a coincidence.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's where the whole term fractional reserve banking comes from, right? They only have to hold a fraction of your deposit and then they create more out of it. So, in a sense, like theoretically, $100 can create $1,000 of new money in the economy. And if you guys really want to drill into that and how that works, read How Privatized Banking Really Works by Carlos Lara, Bob Murphy, Nelson Nash. Oh, great book. I recommend that. I mean, we recommend that to everybody. That's just a must read.
Yeah. I've even had clients say that that was that should have been the first book they read because it gave them a better understanding of the overall problem. And he's the only client I've ever heard say that. That was Phil. That's a great book to get into about fractional reserve banking because no one ever thinks about it. They don't know that this is going on. They don't know that the Federal Reserve isn't federal, has no reserve, and isn't a bank. They don't know any of these things. Or maybe they do know and they just don't care, but most people have no idea. Let's face it.
No.
Our listeners do, though.
You know, and I would think if you're listening to this, you probably have a better sense than most people about this stuff. And maybe you did know that. You need to share that with other people. Who was it? Maybe it was Thomas Jefferson said, like, if 10% of the population, or if Americans really knew what was going on with the banking system, there'd be a revolution overnight.
Yeah, it was either him or Andrew Jackson.
Yeah,
because he was a big opponent to a central bank, as was Jefferson. Two different generations, but for sure.
Yeah. So, and if banks
fail, history's fascinating about it, though.
It is, and they were right about everything. Like our founding fathers, our early presidents who understood the dangers of central banking, they were right about everything. I mean, go back and look at what they had to say, what they wrote. You can't prove them wrong. That's for sure. But you got to understand the problem. And it all starts with understanding the problem. So fractional reserve banking, creating money out of thin air. You're just a unsecured creditor when you lend money to the banks by depositing it automatically. Isn't it funny? Like, automatically, you used to pick up a check on a Friday. Now it goes automatically to the bank, right? It goes there.
They make it easier and easier to separate yourself from your money.
Yep. Even shares of stocks go to the DTC. They actually sit with the DTC. You don't actually get that share certificate anymore that you hold with your hands. It's all digital, and it goes to another entity and sits there, and they're leveraging that. You know, that old conventional saying, or that maxim, possession is 9/10 of the law. It really is, because when banks fail, as we know from the last, you know, the big 08 crash and everything that was rewritten at that time, when banks fail in the future, they are allowed to use the money you have on deposit to revive the bank, keep it alive, and you get shares in return. So, you know, this has happened in other countries where they couldn't access their own money.
Yeah. So we have a solution, though, right? So that was part of what Nelson was trying to get at for all Americans, is building this 10% and what was privatized banking. In that book that you mentioned, How Privatized Banking Really Works, is a great way to, one, not contribute as much to inflation, like by not warehousing all of your funds in a commercial bank or a credit union, by warehousing it in private life insurance contracts, right? And then using that to fund your lifestyle, your needs, your tuition payments, whatever it is, your mortgage payments eventually, you will contribute less to the overall problem of endless money creation, which is what makes the money that you already have less valuable. Every single year, the dollar, every single day, they are printing money. The Federal Reserve is, and giving it to the government. And that's why you can't keep up.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's direct benefits and indirect benefits of doing it the way, you know, that Nelson described an infinite banking concept, through dividend paying, properly designed dividend paying whole life insurance policies. You know, the direct benefits, there's a ton of, we probably have a podcast episode on each individual benefit that there is, but you capitalize these policies, you build that cash value up, and then you borrow against it. You never spend it. You let it compound uninterrupted, right? And you get access to the insurance company's pot of money as a line of credit, essentially, to go do your spending. You can still pay with cash, but you're not paying with your own cash. You know, what's better than paying cash? Well, paying with somebody else's cash. That's a lot better. So a lot of direct benefits. Indirectly, like you mentioned, now you're not participating in the fractional reserve economy. Yes, life insurance companies have to keep money in banks. When you take that money out, you take that loan from the life insurance company, it gets deposited into a bank. Unfortunately, you can't escape the banking system, right? It's so integrated into the fabric of our economy, you can't really escape it. You can only escape parts of it. But when that money, when that loan from the life insurance company hits my account, it's immediately gone, because I'm not taking loans just for money to go sit in some bank account somewhere. I'm taking loans, so as soon as it hits that account, I've got that money working for me somewhere else, right? And it, where does it go? It's going to end up in another bank. There's nothing I can do about that. But at least indirectly, what I've done is I've limited the reserves the bank has, because I'm not storing my capital with the banks. I'm storing it at the life insurance company, you know, purchasing life insurance.
That's right. And Nelson alludes to that in Becoming Your Own Banker. The money, it all, you know, water flows through, you know, he does this analogy where, you know, there's only one pool of water, right, in the world, right? But, you know, some of it flows through us. Some of it's in that lake over there. The oceans obviously hold most of it. Money is like this, is like that in the sense that it passes through our hands. It goes from me to you, but it's all going to move and end up back in the banking system. I mean, it has to, right? But the point is, just like Dave said, if you limit the amount of money you put in the bank and limit their reserve capability, you contribute less to the overall problem of inflation. And thus, you help your neighbor, you help yourself, you help future generations, more importantly. Now, are you going to put a dent in it? Probably not.
No.
But it doesn't matter, because what we're trying to do here through the infinite banking concept is control the function of banking at the you and me level. And that's all we can control. And that's right. Okay.
Yeah. That's just it. Is there's a lot in this. In fact, most of life you can't control. But the couple things I can control, man, I want to control them. So if you have the chance, the opportunity to control some of the banking function in your life, wouldn't you want to look into that? And I'm glad we did. I'm glad I did. You know, one of the other great things is you're actually an owner. When you put your money into one of these life insurance companies, if you're doing this correctly and working with somebody who knows what they're doing, it's a mutual life insurance company, which means you're an owner of that company. Are you an owner of the bank? I mean, maybe if you have shares, if you're a shareholder, you go out on the market and buy some. Yeah, I mean, you hold some value, some equity. But no, you're a customer. You're a customer. And really, I think that's what Nelson was mostly talking about, is don't be customers of the bank. You know, limit the amount of interactions you have with them as customers. Because there is actually ways, and this is far beyond what we want to talk about here, there's ways to where banks can view you as a partner instead of a customer, where the bank actually needs you instead of you needing the bank. And that's a whole different place in life to be, you know, a real position of strength when you get to that position. But in reality, you're a customer of the bank.
Yeah, absolutely. I tell you what, you know, we talk, and I'm glad you brought this up, but ownership is critically important. And that's, you're not an owner of the bank. You're a customer of the bank. If you practice IBC, you are an owner of a very old, very stable mutual life insurance company that is guaranteeing the collateral, your death benefit, paying you interest and dividends every year, uninterrupted growth, providing you access to capital, giving you privacy. I mean, it's all these things wrapped into one. And when you can walk into a bank and sit with them and show them your balance sheet, where you have all this liquidity, all this money working for you, it really does change the conversation. And I, you know, had lunch with my mortgage guy like in the last couple of weeks, and it was just like, you know, in a couple of years, I won't, and I said this, you know, jokingly, I won't need you anymore. I want to put you out of business because I really like you. He's a good dude, but I don't need your bank anymore at some point in the near future. And that's great.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, we're going to cut this episode right here because this one went pretty long, and we'll pick up with the second half next week.
So go check out in the show notes the link to our website, thewealthwarehousepodcast.com. We've got a bunch of great resources on there. You can watch Dave's little video that's very handy. And do not schedule a call with us unless you've read Nelson's book, which if you're watching us on YouTube, it's right there. So read Becoming Your Own Banker, maybe some other books in IBC, schedule a call with us. We'll be more than happy to talk with you.
Absolutely. And until next time, control your capital.
Or somebody else will.
Hey, I'm Dave.
And I'm Paul.
And this is the Wealth Warehouse Podcast.